Welcome, everyone. I think we're up to our fifth episode of Radical Responses to Relevant Realities. I'll just reiterate a request that I made a moment ago. If everyone, if you have side conversations, just try not to have those because I'm easily distracted, generally because I find the other conversations to be more interesting than what I'm talking about. But you'll just do me that favor. We are recording, so once again, we'll try to keep the jokes funny because it's going up on YU Torah. If you have any controversial comments, make sure I don't mention your name unless you want them associated with you. Tonight we're going to be moving to, well, actually last year was a 20th century posek, but we're going to be moving a little bit earlier to the Sridei Eish, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. Generally, I don't like to spend any time on the bios, but this time I think it merits some attention. Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg is very unique and someone we should note because not only was he a person who authored 20th century Shaul HaTshuvos, but in addition, he was a modern Orthodox Gadol Hador who authored 20th century Tshuvos. And in order to really encapsulate and present and do him justice, I wanted to pick a tshuva that brings out what we might call a somewhat modern Orthodox approach to halacha. And you'll see what I mean by that when we learn the tshuva. But just look at his biography for a moment. On the first page of your source sheets, hopefully you have them. If you don't have a copy, there's on the WhatsApp group I put, so you can download from there. If it's not on the WhatsApp group, then David will forward you an electronic copy. Look at the biography. Look at his education. His education, Slobodka, Mir. Then moving on, he studied Russian literature, attended University of Berlin, and also, he got a doctorate, albeit his doctorate was in Jewish study. It was on the Pshita. But nonetheless, we have a rabbi doctor scholar we're dealing with here. I was always tempted, thinking like I'm finishing my master's degree this year. I was always tempted to get the doctor because it just gives you more scholar and residence gigs. You put rabbi doctor, maybe I'll get my doctor or something like speech language pathology. No one will know what it's for. It's a doctorate. Anyway, that's what Rabbi Weinberg is. And his career, unfortunately, was stunted because he went through the Holocaust. Somewhat fortunately for him, he had Russian citizenship, and therefore, instead of being put into concentration camps with the other Jews, he was put in what I believe is called a prisoner of war camp when the Germans captured Russians. So because he was put in awful conditions, but he wasn't put in concentration-level conditions, he was able to survive the war. And if you look at the Sridei Eish, the very title itself tells you what his disposition was, what he was thinking. Sridei Eish, it's talking about the remnants from the fire. These writings he has, I think he lost some writings because of the Holocaust, but the tshuva we're going to look at, if I'm not mistaken, was a situation, a scenario that he had to address prior to the Holocaust, and then only wrote up later when he had time. I believe he spent the rest of his days after the war. One of his students brought him to Switzerland, and he was offered many other positions before the end of his life. But I think the trauma that he went through in his life, not just in the Holocaust, he decided to live out the rest of his days in Switzerland. And thankfully, we have the Sridei Eish published for us to benefit from. The Sridei Eish we are going to study is, some people like to call it the Kol Isha Tshuva. That's not accurate. It's really the Sridei Eish on co-ed youth groups, not the Sridei Eish on Kol Isha. We're going to see he deals with two issues. He deals with the issue of just male-female interaction in general, and then he deals with the question of Kol Isha. I already gave away, one other preamble. I know last week we talked about gender reassignment halacha. Next week we're going to talk about OCD and mental illness. So this seems like less of a hot topic. Like, oh, of course, men and women can be together. That's a double pashut. Why are we discussing this? So it's going to be fascinating, the points that he brings up, and we're going to apply it hopefully to modern day. We're going to raise some questions about if the practice that we have in the modern Orthodox community would be validated by this Sridei Eish. But let's raise some questions. This is a very timely matter actually. Does anyone have kids in camp by any chance, or relatives working in sleepaway camp or day camps anywhere? Okay. So, you know, what is it?
Avnet,
the Oh, Avnet. Okay. So I'm not so familiar with Avnet, but I've worked at a number of programs and camps in the past. I've worked at Moshava, Morasha. I volunteered for NCSY in my early undergrad career. And it seems that co-ed singing is almost a staple of many of these programs. Could anyone – so if we have a tshuva that's going to address – if co-ed youth groups are permissible, that means that there's a question that they're not permissible. What could be the possible issues that you would raise just on your own, any sources or ideas that you've heard in other places that you think could be an issue, and that's something that we would need to grapple with when discussing this topic? What are the issues we would need to think about when discussing co-ed interactions? Kolisha, excellent. And that's what we're going to deal with over here. Could there be any other issues aside for Kolisha? Just to define the terms, Kolisha is a prohibition, it's Talmudic. The rabbis say that listening to a woman's voice is like nakedness. It's like erva. So we're going to refer to that concept as Kolisha erva. I hope you got that down pat for the rest of the year because you're going to need to know that. Any other possible issues between men and women interacting? Any stories in Tanakh or the Talmud you're familiar with that might be pro or con such an institution?
Well, the issue what they were worried about, not listening to the Kol Isha, but what it'll affect you to do.
Oh, excellent. Hurim. So, okay, excellent point. We're going to get to this in the tshuva, actually, so I don't want to jump the gun, but we'll get to that in a moment. Very good point. Yeah.
You're meeting and you're kind of having fun, but without any real purpose. I think they could wind up like connecting to each other, but without any deeper meaning or long term.
So frivolity, right? You're saying that there's when men or women together, it could lead to frivolity. Is that
yes,
right? And it could also be it could be bittelsman. It could be a misuse of time. I think actually in Pirkei Avos, when it says, Al tarbe sicha im ha'isha, I forgot which Rishon says it, but aside for leading to sexual morality, just one concern is that you're going to waste your time. And this is obviously on the assumption that women back then weren't learning and weren't going to be discussing, advanced lumdus. So they assume that if you spend too much time talking with women, you're wasting your time. Okay, good. So that's another point to raise. Are there any other possible considerations we should be taking into account? Any other possible issues why we would think men and women should be together? Do we know of instances when men and women should be together in halacha that we still practice today? Something that would happen in this very room, this base boundary, this shul?
Room davening.
During davening. Excellent. So...
Asnas.
Oh, okay. The reason, though, it's a good point.
Right.
Chasna is a lot of literature on. I'm not going to get to it here. It's actually funny that you bring that up. The reason. Yeah?
Masada Kedushin with Moshe Feinstein.
Oh, that's pretty important.
When they asked him if he wanted separate seating at the wedding, he said, "You can have separate seating. I'm sitting with my wife."
Whoa.
And I
have
a picture in our living room with Moshe sitting with his wife.
Wow. If I get that picture from you later, the reason that it's funny you bring that up is because I just finished putting together a shiur, dafka, on the topic of mixed seating at a wedding, because, God willing, I'm getting married at the end of August, and so my side is like a little bit more of a Haredi population, so they're a little bit more into the separate seating, so it became like a whole discussion, and I, lekavod the wedding for Shabbos Sheva Brachos, which is also my first internship Shabbos in Plainview, I put together a shiur on the literature surrounding mixed seating at a wedding, and actually, so there's a tshuva from Rav Nachum Rabinovich, who is the Rosh Yeshiva Malia Dumim. Very interesting figure also because he learned in Eretz Yisrael, married Rav Ruderman's daughter, and now is the Rosh Yeshiva Malia Dumim, which is, I would categorize more as a Dati Lumi, modern Orthodox Yeshiva. And so he, in his tshuva on this topic, points out at the end that he's seen Rav Moshe Feinstein at quote-unquote mixed weddings, and he's seen many other gedolim as well. Anyway, we're not going to focus on weddings right now. We're going to focus on co-ed youth group specifically. So if any of you have any kids or nieces and nephews in these programs, get ready. The first, okay, so hopefully everyone has, I stole enough that everyone had time to get the electronic copies of your source sheets. If not, you'll enjoy it out loud, though it's much better with a source sheet if you get hold of that. This is the case. There was a co-ed youth group called Yeshurun that came to Rabbi Weinberg, and they said to him that we run this program. It's like I guess you would call a Kiruv kind of program. My impression is, and my chavers and I, we emailed Professor Mark Shapiro, who wrote an excellent book on Rabbi Weinberg, which is later in the sources, and he says this is more like an NCSY program, Jewish Orthodox co-ed youth program, but Orthodox in the sense that the staff are Orthodox and are doing Kiruv, an outreach on kids that are not observant. My impression was more like high school, middle school, but because I'm imagining if the kids are like elementary or lower, then it doesn't present as much of an issue. It's probably, you know, kids who are pubescent and beyond. So the issue that was brought up is two things. Look in the first paragraph. On the line it starts, V'har Urim Heim Shnaim. There were these Charedim, they say, these Charedim that said that what they're doing is not Lefi Ruach HaYadus. Ir Neged Tzuras Irgun HaZeshu Mishatev Banim Ubanos. Number one, that they're mixing boys and girls together. Ba'avodo Ma'agdam La'guda Achas. V'ir Neged HaMinag Shnahagu. Sha'a Banim Ubanos Mizamrim Yachad Zmira Shel Suda Shabbos O Zmiras Kosh Acheres. They're coming together on Shabbos, and they're singing Dror Yikra. They're doing the cup thing together. They're singing Tzor Mishalo. They're singing all the songs where they do the dance. I don't know. And they're singing Zmir's Kodesh, but they're singing together. And the traditionalists were very opposed to this practice that Yeshurun allowed for boys and girls to interact together and to sing together. And so now they're reaching out to Rabbi Weinberg and this French youth group, and they're asking him, should we change? Should we put our foot down and say, we don't allow this? This is against Orthodox Judaism. That is the question that they brought up. That's section number one. Look inside for section number two. This is his answer. Vashiv al rishon rishon v'acharon acharon. Ir urei acharedim bevada yesh lehem al mal lismoch. Certainly the charedim, these staunch traditionalists, have what on what to rely on. Shrei af al pi din Torah, because according to Din Torah, the strict law of the Torah, we should be separating men and women so it doesn't lead to Kalas Rosh, frivolity, as you pointed out. So this is just, notice the, if you're following along in the Hebrew, notice the interesting juxtaposition. He says, Yesh lehem al mah lismoch, the traditionalists have on what to rely on, Shrei al pi Din Torah. And then he says, Shrei al pi Din Torah, that they're going based on Din Torah. So I don't get it, because if they're following Din Torah, then it's not like they have what to rely on. They're the baseline. Anyone who allows co-ed youth groups and singing together is deviating from what the Torah's baseline is. So that's just an interesting language over there. So he says, this has been our tradition. We do not let boys and girls mix together in general. And he cites Beir Maim Chaim as support, end of section two. So we got the problem down pat. This youth group has been told by these Charedim, pretty much similar to what we refer to as Charedim today, I would suppose, that their youth group is against Halacha. Section number three, we're going to, already I cut down the tshuva, but there's still a lot of it left, so we're going to skip over certain parts. Section number three, or Os Gimel. Mikol Mako, So when they came to me, what did I rule? I said that they should continue to do that which the Gedolei Ashkenaz have been doing for a long time. And these Gedolei Ashkenaz, these German rabbis who have permitted similar practices, their Kavanas L'Shem Shemayim, their Tzadikim Gedolim, their great righteous people, and everything they're doing is with the intent of bringing people tachas kanfei Hashchina is to bring people closer to God. And more so, not only is their intention pure, ugedoli Ashkenaz, so bekiim umumchim bechachmas achinach. These gedoli Ashkenaz in Germany, Germany is Western Europe, they're more modernized than the Eastern European Jewish counterparts. Not only what they're doing has pure intent, but it's actually strategically superior to that which the Haredim want. What they're doing by permitting co-ed youth groups and even the singing is strategically better for bringing people into the Orthodox fold. And therefore, not only do they have pure intent, but they are experts. They are mumchem, and we should trust their judgment on the matter. That's what he brings up regarding them. Looking looking a little further, over here, you skip, go to the next page, go to Ost Dalet, skip down to the last paragraph in section 4. Well, just to fill you in on what he said before, he cited an instance of Rav Hildesheimer, where Rav Hildesheimer would give shiurim to young girls, and the rabbis the Lifish rabbis, rabbis in Lita, they would be opposed to such a practice. And they would probably say that Rav Hildesheimer was going against halacha. But Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg says, Mikol Makom, Havashia Chelki Began Edim, Magon, Harav Atzadek, Rav Israel Hildesheimer. You know, if I just wish that my chelek in Olam Haba, that my portion, will be anywhere near Rav Hildesheimer, who would teach Urim where there are women. That's just an interesting point that I didn't want to skip over. Now, go to the end of Ostal, last paragraph. He builds up an entire case about how these boys and girls grow up in homes where the parents do not keep halacha, they're not shomrei Torah mitzvos, and he says their only way to find out about God is through this youth group, which is pretty similar, you know, my experience at NCSY. That was like a lot of the philosophy that they pushed during advisor meetings. They said these boys and girls, you know, we got to get them to Israel, and when we get them to Israel, they'll be Jewish, they'll practice Judaism. And, you know, they're even if their parents are opposed to it. So that's just another interesting ethical question to bring up, which is, on one hand, you believe that Orthodox Judaism should be practiced by all Jews, but what do you do if a kid doesn't practice that and his parents don't want him to? How do you navigate that? That's just a throwback, actually, to our question in our third year about a Baal Tshuva smashing his parents' TV remote control. On one hand, according to Rav Schermbach, halachically he had to do it, but is he allowed to do it? Is he allowed to do it because it might cause strife between his parents? That was one concern that we brought up. Now, looking at the end of this paragraph, Lefikach ani mekadem besimcha bracha as erugun yishurun, I am ecstatic about this youth group. They are fighting the battle. They are fighting a war to save these Jewish children. So, elano diktatora tzvayis ve'em yichalasein linkonim tzay kfiya negan noar hamisrachim yitano. And then he says in the bold, we can't create this, you know, almost militaristic dictatorship to force the kids to practice halacha. Rather, what could we do? El derech hatzola achas v'yechida lechave v'seyados. Rather, what's our approach? We have to go over to them. We put our arm around their shoulder, say, come on, Judaism's great, you should practice it. Back in my experience in NCSY or most of other camps, it's like, well, you have to pretend to be cool and play basketball, because if I see the counselor playing basketball and he learns Torah, well, I play basketball, so I should be able to learn Torah also. You know, like that's like the kind of shtick that they do. You know, playing the relatable rabbi. I watch movies, and so now I can relate to the kids. That's almost like the kind of svar he's giving here, just hopefully he means it less cheesy. Instead of forcing a kid, and this might even, you know, I actually want to take a step back and ask you what you think. He's dealing with an outreach scenario where Lace Brera, we don't have a choice in the matter here. The only way to bring them into an Orthodox style of living, to be Shomer Torah Mitzvos, is to befriend them and to do it in a Derech Ahava. But that's only because that's our only option. I want to raise the question, what about kids who grew up in an Orthodox setting? Should we only use the method of befriending them and showing them the positive aspects of Judaism? Or should there also be that other side, which he calls the Torah Tzvaitz, where we should also be firm and putting our foot down and saying that breaching halacha is unacceptable? Is he saying that that is a philosophy in general we should take, or only because it's a bidyevit situation, that's why we should pretend to be all friendly? What do you guys think about that?
I don't think it's so black and white. I think even people who grow up in what we nominally call Orthodox environments are not necessarily so secure in their religion, approach, attitudes, and faith. And we cannot take it for granted. And I'm not sure that it is what we think. It may be that children and families that are nominally in the so-called Orthodox community are also still at risk.
Oh, for sure. There's all sorts of organizations that address that.
I'm talking about the kids who are at risk because they're already off the dark. I'm talking about the regular people in the regular schools. We think that's such a secure thing that they'll stay.
So I'll give you an example, right? That's a good point. I want to elaborate on that. My experience growing up was I went to Yeshiva Darkei Torah, moderately Haredi school, right? Black hat, they subscribe to Agudas Yisrael and the whole nine yards. Their approach that I always found was, if you don't want to keep halacha, they hit you over the head with mussar, and they tell you, you know, essentially, if you don't follow it, fire and brimstone, you'll burn in hell. Like, that's the kind of approach that I received when I was a kid. But my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, by working in non-Orthodox camps institutions and talking with teachers who work in non-Orthodox schools, is that there's less of that Derech Musar approach, and there's more of the, well, Judaism's cool, so, you know, it's fun, it's positive, it's good for you, so you should join because of that. I saw a lot more of that kind of approach. And now I think you're right, it's not black or white. There could be a mix of both, and that's probably the best approach. I'm saying there's usually a primary approach that's taken. If a kid is not going to keep halacha, what are you going to do, push comes to shove? Are you just going to be very, very nice and then let him drift off? Or are you going to put the foot down? That's just something I want to raise. We're not going to come to any conclusions. I'm by no means a professional educator. I'm still taking my master's degree, so I'm definitely not an authority on the matter. But that's a point I wanted to raise here. Anyway, that's apart from our main topic. Moving on into tshuva, just to look at section Hey, I bullet briefly. He talks about halacha. Up until now, he's just been setting the stage for us. This is the scenario. These boys and girls need Kirev, and therefore Yeshurun is a wonderful organization that needs to exist. And in the halachic part, he look at this at the end, the underlying part of section Hey. Now this goes in. You brought up mixed weddings, right? Okay, this part over here. This is the line where he addresses it. Varak b'beis ha'knesses. We brought up mechitzas before, right? Mechitzas are still something that we accept today to separate men and women even in monorthodox practice. Varak b'beis ha'knesses yesh takana kaduma las mechitzas kavos. It's only in a shul, in a synagogue, in a sanctuary, that we still have this institution of having high mechitzos. Shal yochu l'staka mishum tefila u'kriya shema, so that people won't be able to stare. Sha'asar mitam erva. Interesting point. He says the purpose of mechitzos is stakless. That's what Tzitzel Eliezer says. It's different from Moshe Feinstein, who says that the reason for mechitza is to prevent frivolity and kalas rosh, which is why Ramosha, his shiur ends off at 18 tfachim, whereas those who hold that the issue is a stockless looking, you need more than just a mechitza to go up to your shoulder, you need a mechitza that could go above everyone's heads. So interesting, it sounds like he takes a machmir position on mechitzas when it's in a shul. But if we look, Aval ba'aspa shel rishus, when it comes to gatherings that are not obligatory in nature, meaning they're not mitzvahs, gagon b'shas hachnasas kala lechuppah, when they're bringing the woman to the chuppah, the bride to the chuppah, o b'shas numim udrushos, or let's say we're talking about the rabbi's drusha. Some shuls you'll go to, depending, you know, I guess not over here, because here there's a machitz that's part of the architecture, but I've been to shuls before where they lower down, they have like a curtain for mechitza. So when the rabbi gives the drasha, they just take the curtain down. I'm very machmir to not take the curtain down, so I just make sure there's no rabbi's drasha. that's the real chumrah we should be adopting. So he says, what about these times? So then, really, we don't need lo hikpido me'ol masas mechitzas. You don't need to make mechitzas during these times. But we are, note the word, medaktikim. We're scrupulous, we're meticulous, we're careful to make sure that at least they don't sit together. I was at my little brother's graduation at Darche a few months ago, and I got there with my fiance. She went to Hank. Marissa, you may have seen her some weeks. And we got there, and then we were pretty surprised because not only were the men and women separated, but there was a mechitza going down the middle. It was a graduation ceremony. You know, it wasn't even a drusha. And most of the stories were just about old Europe. There wasn't that much Torah that was shared. So she was like astounded, like, what, a mechitza for a graduation ceremony? It's not even in a shul. It was in the auditorium. So there's different customs on this. So what he says is, if you want to be machmir, you seat everyone separately, right? But even if you're, you know, that's just being machmir. Certainly if you're mekel, you don't have, mitzad halacha, we don't need to worry about boys and girls, men and women being together. And this point at Shuvah is a cutoff point. We have addressed issue number one. Men and women interacting is not a halachic issue. There are many sources that we go beyond the call of duty to separate men and women. But men and women outside of the synagogue, outside of certain ceremonies, men and women do not need to be separated halachically. That's his point. So issue number one's taken care of. Boys and girls can be together, according to the strict letter of the law. But what about our second issue, Kol Isha? And that's what he deals with in the rest of the tshuva. Skipping to section Zion, section number 7. Thank you for bearing with me. This is the first tshuva that my chavrus and I actually put together, so we left a lot in. But it happens to be there's a lot of good stuff in here also. So let's see what we could skip. Okay. Solution. There are going to be two solutions that the Sridi Eish is going to offer to the issue of Kol Isha. Solution number one is what's offered by Rabbi Hildesheimer. He says, you look at the first paragraph in the bold, but Rabbi Hildesheimer permitted boys and girls, men and women, to sing together. Why? Why was that permissible? I Kol B'Isha Erva.
Listen. Not distinct.
Ah, excellent. V'atam Ishum D'Trei Kala Lo Mishtamoy. There's a concept that when two people are doing something to speak together, one voice, as you pointed out, will not be distinguished from the other. So if we have men and women, boys and girls singing together, you're not listening to Kol Isha, you're listening to, I don't know what you want to call it, Kol of a choir. Kol choir. Is that what you want to say?
Kol choir.
Kol choir. I like that. So you can almost make a chakira. Is the pshat, you know, for the people who are inclined towards limits in the audience, is the pshat that really there is Kol Isha, just I'm not going to distinguish it from the rest of the people singing. Or like what you said, it's the Kol Choir Svara, that when all the people are singing together, it becomes a new chefsa called Kol Choir. It becomes a new entity, which was not us or Mitzad Halacha. I just made that up on the spot, but all right, you seem to approve of that. Wonderful. That's reason number one. And he adduces a proof. He quotes a Stei Chemed. For those of our Tanakh junkies out there, the story of Devorah and Barak. After they defeated Sisera's army, they sang together. They sang Zmiros to Hashem. How could they do that? Now, okay, I know we want to see, so the academic answer is, this is pre-rabbinic Judaism, but that's not the approach. I know, I'm just joking with you. That's not what you're saying. I'm saying that, but we're not going to go down that approach because we're traditional Jews who like Yimei Halacha, believe in a rabbinic tradition. Harpa. So Howard Devorah and Barak allowed to sing together. So the Svaritz given is Shebishas Hashras Hashkina. It's permissible because when the Shechina, because God's divine presence rested on them, there can't be any dover osir, there can't be any frivolity or sexual morality happening. And what the Sfaradi wants to do is extrapolate from there and say that when boys and girls sing together, also when it's Zmiros Kodesh, then it's permissible. Because when you're singing Zmiros together, no one's going to think about the woman across the circle from them. No one's going to have illicit thoughts because you're singing Zmiros Kodesh. Now, this far as, yeah, okay, it's, first of all, it's a stretch. Excellent point. Because there's a difference between the Shekhinah resting upon us and then just Zmiros Kodesh. And then just Zmiros Kodesh. Issue number two I want to point out is this is a funny svara. Why did I say that? We have a mechitza in the synagogue, but not in other places. Why do we have extra restrictions here in general? Because it's kadosh. Exactly. This is a kadosh place. Kedusha, he's trying to say, is a svara not to worry about frivolity and davar aser. But I could say that no, kedusha is dafka to svara, that you should be extra careful when it comes to this. Right, there might be a difference between, you know, he separates from his wife. He's literally abstaining from sexuality with her. But but yes, okay, your point's well taken. That supports the thesis. So he says, Shebizmiros Kodesh ein locho sheyiskavnu lahanos mikol isha. Right, there's an idea out there. The Shach in Hilchos Nida is famous for bringing this up. That says that something that's not done with derechiba is okay. So what does that mean? The issue is deriving sexual benefit. But if you do something, and this is a part of the argument that someone should be it should be permissible to do a handshake with the opposite gender in a business forum because it's a handshake. True, you're touching. True, you're not supposed to touch. But this touching is not derechiba. It's not a sexual kind of touch or a sensual kind of touch. And therefore, it should be permissible because it's only problematic if it is of a sensual or sexual nature. So too over here, as long as you're not trying to derive hana, it's okay. Now, I want to point out, just skipping to some of just glance at the sources in the back, some of the rabbis think this is a joke. What does that mean, you're not coming? You don't want to get hana. There's this rabbi, I'm trying to get his name. Rabbi Meir Amzel. I think if I'm not mistaken, he was a Hasidic rabbi who lived in Brooklyn, and he published this in 1956, not too long, I think, after this tshuva itself was published. And he wrote an article. He said, for bringing these boys and girls together, it's a mitzvah haba lidei avera rabba. And in this paragraph, this is source number 8, he brings up one of our favorite complaints. V'achinuch ha-meshutav hazeh meviim gam kein lechol l'shos b'yachad. This chinuch ha-meshutav, it doesn't stop here. The Sri Yesh, we didn't read it inside, but he says, everything's going to be done properly. They're only singing Zmiros Kodesh together. They're only singing holy songs. And there's madrichim that are ethical and are going to be supervising them. He has like this utopian idea of what happens. Like, I've worked in co-ed camps. Like, that's not how it works. And madrichim aren't always the most ethical people. And he says, you know what's going to happen? They're going to eat. They're going to drink together. V'gam lirkod olaholo narmanaros. Mixed dancing. It's going to lead to mixed dancing. There you go. So there's one of those classic 1950s pieces about how boys and girls coming together will lead to mixed dancing. And he goes on and he says that this is faulty. You know, when we say the Torah wasn't given to angels, it can work against us also. We have to accept that human beings are human beings. Yisrael had a question first, then we'll get there. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Wasn't there a source in Gomorrah that said, even at a funeral,
yes,
separate.
So it's Gemara and Sukkah. Very good.
About.
So this is very related to Mechitza Sugya. There's a Gemara at the end of Maseches Sukkah that says even at the levai of the Yetzirah, the funeral of the Yetzirah himself, men and women will still be separated because they won't be able to control their taivas. They won't be able to control their temptations. And that's actually that's in the Gemara where we learn out the source for Mechitza in general. But so that's just an interesting point. And then, this is something that the tshuva is also very famous for. Oh, wait, yeah, Yisrael?
Yeah, this regarding Trekali Lo Mishdami. Does anyone reject that application to this context? Because the original context is in the context of Kriyas HaTorah, where the issue is, like, in terms of being able to focus enough on one person for all the works. Whereas when it comes to Kol Isha, the concern is, like, arousal.
Right.
Like that, where it could be, you would still be aroused, even if you can't necessarily hear every single word from one.
Yeah, so look, the it's rejected by others. I don't know if I cite him on the source sheet. And I think it's rejected by many people who just never brought this svara to begin with. He's not the first one, I think, to bring the svara, but he definitely is one of the few in his time to use it halachically in this context. But then, this is also something that the tshuva is very famous for. He says, Ace, look in the bold. He cited it a few times. We skipped it. Ace, what can we do? Ace lasos Hashem heferu Torah secha. This is the concept that comes up. Originally, we weren't supposed to write down Torah Shebel Peh on paper. Torah Shebel Peh, the Talmud, maybe Medrash. This is the oral Torah. It means it should be spoken. It should be passed down from generation to generation orally. But we wrote it down because the Jewish people were forgetting God's teachings. And therefore, the rabbi said, if we don't put down the Torah into the Torah Shebel Peh into writing, we're not going to have a Torah Shebel Peh anymore. So, for the sake of upkeeping the Torah, they invoked Eis Asos Hashem Efor Torah Secha. It's a time to act for God, so we have to uproot the Torah. And what he says here is that even if this is not the best behavior, we will apply this principle of Eis Asos Hashem Efor Torah Secha. Now, once again, this is All right. Exactly. All right, wonderful. Yes. And so this presents an issue because, again, this is albeit he's a non-Orthodox rabbi, he's still an Orthodox rabbi, right? Remember, we brought this up, and we've addressed this issue, I think, once or twice already in the series, which is when we bring up an idea like Aver Lishma, let's say. You just use this big concept, and you throw it out there, and it solves all your problems. Oh, what about that Ron over there, that Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, and the Rishma? You can quote all your sources and, like, Aver Lishma, Kavun Habriot, Tikkun Olam. You know, you can use all these big words and it solves all your issues. You can just throw the rest of the Gemara out. You know, they all have perforated. My rabbi used to make a joke about Dina Machutz Dina. He says, so what do? We take our Choshe Mishpats and they have perforated pages in there. Oh, okay, Dina Machutz Dina. We'll rip that page out now because that doesn't work for us. That's not what he's doing here. He's doing what we've seen in the past. I went to Darka. I didn't learn Zionist history, so I can't answer that. So he's doing what we've seen done in the past, which is he already advanced what at least he believes to be a cogent halachic argument. If he didn't bring in Eis Asos Hashem, he would still have a halachic argument. He's based in the sources. Rather, what he's doing, I think, at the end is he's saying there is a stringent opinion we could take and there's a lenient opinion that we could take. Why do we have the right to adopt a lenient opinion to allow men and women, boys and girls to sing together? We should adopt the opinion that's been accepted by our forefathers, by our ancestors for millennia, that men and women don't sing together. Okay, Barak and Devorah, all right, we dealt with that issue. So what he uses this as just a means towards tipping the scale to rely on a lenient position. But if the sources never supported permitting men and women to sing together, Eis Asos Hashem would not help us. How do I know that? Look at the last paragraph in section Ches, in section 8. He has a question. Anyone should be able to wield this weapon now and permit anything that they wish. Certainly, the full power of Eis Asos Hashem, only that can be wielded by Chazal to actually undo or ignore a halacha for the sake of the continuity of Klal Yisrael. La'chriya masayhu ha'eis asosu ma moter la'hafer. V'lo nimtzo l'chol adam la'asos ma'iseh b'shvil shehu yodea ki yesh kan eis asos. It's not given over to your random Joe pulpit rabbi to decide. V'ulam beninam she'en kan iser gamor. Rather, in a case where there's no absolute prohibition. V'rak she'yesh kan minan chasidus u'minas sniyas. But The minhag has always been to be more stringent on the matter. Then, efshar lidrosh smuchin lohatir be'eretz arafas, shagvar yiyah matzav hayhuis ad shaber v'mlonachos b'm tzayim chinuchim v'nisiyim mutarim batzlacha, etc., etc., etc. He points out to Irgun Ezra. Oh, I didn't even notice that last time. Irgun Ezra and Irgun Yishrun are legitimized by this Eis HaSos Hashem. Eis HaSos Hashem is not given over to someone like even the Sridei Eish to just use whenever he wants. But if there is a Midas Chasiyus, a more stringent position, we have the right to lean to the lenient position because of using this metahalachic principle of Eis HaSos Hashem. That much is able to be wielded by a Posek Hador. Now, I would want to say that I'm going to propose on my own there are gradations. The full power of Eis HaSos Hashem to nullify an actual halacha head-on, that's only given to Chazal. That's what he says. But I think even to use Eis HaSos Hashem to lean towards a lenient position, I would think that is only something that a gadol or a posek should be able to do. I don't think it's up to the you know myself or any other random person to just decide when to use these principles. That's just my ha'ar on the matter. You could fight me on that afterwards if you'd like. What time are we at? Okay, I'm going to try to wrap up for you soon. So he said, okay, so he quotes Eis HaSos Hashem at the beginning of section 9. But then I want to look at something really interesting. In section 9, he says, looking to underline in the first paragraph, at the end of the first paragraph, Sheba'artzos kamo Ashkenaz, v'tzarafas, Hanashim argishos alvanon upegia bezichyosein im nasser alein lishtadif ba'oneg Shabbos aydis miras kodesh. Now he's going to bring in
feminism.
So good question. This is good. Let's finish this idea. We'll see if it's feminism. I'll just preface that Sridei Eish also has his sympathies for bat mitzvah. Moshe Feinstein was not a fan of bas mitzvah. The Sridei Eish has a tshuva where he, I think, I have to look at it, but I think for similar reasons he was okay and said bas mitzvah is something that could be pursued, which for his time is what?
Because we're living in the West.
So he's talking about. Okay, so he says as follows: these women, they'll feel bad. They want to sing Zmiras Kodesh. They want to be involved in religious life. And this is self-evident for anyone who knows women in these countries. And what's going to happen? If we don't let them sing, it's going to push them away from the religion. I want to ask you a question. You brought up feminism, right? We don't have a lot of time. This could go on forever. I know during the Kollel lunches, we have very, very lively discussions on this matter. You're all welcome to join us in the future if you want. There's the push. That's the ad. Is this feminism? I don't think this is feminism. I think this might achieve...
You're saying in Western countries...
I understand.
Women who are... And the question is, you're not telling us entirely different. You're saying in Western countries, there's something about Western civilization, the cultures...
That's...
Women who grow up in these societies sense it to the issue of being excluded... And
so I'll give you my definition of feminism, and then we might be working on different definitions. Let me give the definition, and then I'll explain why I think it's not. If I understand feminism correctly, it's that women should have equal opportunities and equal roles to their male counterparts. That is not the goal of the Sridei Eish here. The Sridei Eish's compelling reason to allow women to sing and be involved is that if we don't allow them, then they will leave the faith. Then they won't feel as involved. Or even, you know, let's put it in positive terms, if we let them sing, they'll feel closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they'll be more involved in religion. The goal isn't to pursue equality. The goal is to pursue Avodas HaKodesh and to allow people to feel closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to be more involved. It may functionally, on the outside, achieve the same goal as feminism, and very likely these women that he's talking about are motivated by these Western notions of feminism, but I don't think that's the reason that the Sridei Eish permits it. That's my ha'ara on the matter. I wrote an essay that I'm hopefully submitting to some forum somewhere, so you can read that one if you want at some point, on this very issue.
Why can't they just go to girl groups and sing with the girls? Why do you have to sing with guys?
So very good point. So the rabbi I quoted before, the Haredi rabbi from Brooklyn, he said, how do we know that boys and girls, how do we know boys are coming to derive hana from the voices of the girls? Because that's the way the programs promote themselves. The boys are only coming daffy because the girls are there. They wouldn't come if it wasn't a co-ed program. But one could make the argument, if you look at towards the end, Rav Aviner in Eretz Yisrael, he talks about Bnei Akiva and Ezra, two youth groups that are prominent in Eretz Yisrael, and he says that if you can't do anything about it, then it's okay to keep them together. But definitely when it comes to schools, under no condition should they be together. He says, Eini makir shum heter, lebeit sefer mu'urav, l'tnuat noar mu'revet. I don't know of any heter for a school or a youth movement to be mixed. L'chein yesh l'sakin es ha-matzav. Therefore, you should fix the situation. But earlier he does, in another essay, he does support the institutions of Bnei Akiva and Ezra, and he says that if you're not able to separate them, it's okay as long as it's being done correctly. He cites this radiation support as well. But just to show you something, that may change your mind on him, how feminist he might be, if he's feminist at all. Let's look at the next part over here. But Parrish, okay, here, look, in the bold. He says like this, She'ein lochuf al hanoshim shetzrichos eshadzeif bezmiras kodesh. Even if we're going to let women sing together with men, the women who don't want to do it should not be forced to sing together with men. V'imis ratz l'hachmer atzman, and if they want to hold fast and be stringent, chalila lalo zalehem lislotzeitz behem, God forbid we should make fun of them and pressure them into doing this. Sharei sof sof minhag aviseinu hakdoishim biyadon shenisharu melahater lonoshim afilus miras kodesh. He had to say it with the chaylams. He says, what are they doing in the end of the day? They are steadfast and holding on to the tradition of our holy fathers. And what I'm presenting here for these women is a heter. But if a woman wants to hold fast to our traditions, she should be able to do it. And we should probably even promote that. And he goes on, and then he gives a nice conclusion paragraph. But this point at the end, I think, just fascinating. And really gives you, a lens into understanding how he's a modern Orthodox rabbi. What does he do? He finds a heter to permit men and women to interact with each other. He finds a heter to allow women to sing and to feel more involved in the religion and in religious communal practice. But his reasoning is very rooted in Orthodoxy. His reason is very rooted in tradition. His reasoning is, we want people to stay within the faith. We want people to feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And while it may look like something that is coming from a westernized movement, it's actually achieving a very traditional goal. So you always have to be mechalik and discern between the motivation versus the result. The result might be the same as a feminist movement, but the result might be the same, but the motivation is a very traditional motivation, akin to what you might see from other Haredi poskim. That's the end of this particular tshuva from the Sruti Eish. One point I want to make is a lot of rabbis disagree with him. We already cited some. I don't feel the need to go through them. You can look in your source packet. But I wanted to, in America, we always look towards Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik as the preeminent modern Orthodox gadol. He was our leading authority. And the question is, what was Rav Soloveitchik's approach on this matter? So I think, the funny thing with Rav Soloveitchik is he becomes whatever you want him to become. You'll have Rabbi Avi Weiss saying one thing, and you'll have Rav Moshe Meiselman saying another on the other extreme. The Rav becomes whatever you want to make of him. We should just be trying to follow Torah, not the Rav, if you know what I mean. But okay. But at any point, Rav Chaim Jachter, he has an essay on the parameters of Kol Yisha, and he says like this, source number 9. Interestingly, I asked Rav Yosef Dos Soloveitchik in 1985 whether he agrees with the ruling of Rav Weinberg, referring to the Kol Yisha heter right here. The Rav replied, I agree with everything that he wrote, except for his permission to stun animals before Shechita. Rav Soloveitchik related his great appreciation of Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. So not only is this a psak from 20th century post-egg who never really made it big and was super accepted in America. But this was something that, at least according to Rabbi the way Rabbi Jachter reports it, that Reb Soloveitchik agreed to as well. And okay, so now we'll get the other interpretation of Reb Soloveitchik. Yeah. You've heard a counter story, right?
Not a counter story, just I read a very fascinating book. I'm sure you've seen it or heard about it. Rob Thinking Out Loud.
Oh yeah.
David Holzer.
Yeah, he was a shamash for the Rav.
Shamash for the Rav.
A lot of Maisa Shahoyas.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, it's a fascinating book, but apparently he at some point was thinking of opening up, I think, a girls' seminary.
Yeah.
Or a girls' institution of some kind. I don't recall exactly. I don't know why. It was just a speaker of girls, so I don't know what was the problem. Maybe for as a Rebbe to attend while they're singing his murals.
Mm-hmm.
This is just my memory from a couple of years ago, but I think it's correct. So he asked the Rav about essentially the fact that there are multiple girls singing in unison. It's not just one girl.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so it's interesting. So maybe there's a distinction. In this particular tshuva, he's talking about boys and girls.
Yeah, yeah. It's important to know. He never permits a girl singing solo. Never permits.
Not with solo, but multiple girls together.
Oh, interesting. So yeah, I was thinking about the same thing. It seems that he only talks about boys and girls singing together, which it's an interesting point because if it's Kol Choir, then you know, then you would think multiple girls singing together should be fine.
If high and low frequencies, really masking.
Right.
This was after the line, but I said it could have been that it was talking about multiple girls together
right.
as opposed to boys and girls together. The Rav said no.
Right, so that's an excellent example. There are many accounts of the Rav. So as I said, you know, we can't really go based on stories that we hear about Reb Soloveitchik. I think we have to talk to the poskim that we have with us today and look at the sources like we're doing here tonight. I'll say one thing. Again, you know, one of the goals of this class, of the series, is to look at tshuvos that are relevant and discussed today. We're going to look back at this. This was done in the 20th century. It doesn't apply today. And one may even question, you know what's so fascinating about this? This is written to a Kirov group. My understanding of this, and tell me if you think otherwise, this tshuva is a bidyevid measure. This tshuva was for a non-ideal circumstance. And therefore, he permitted men and women to sing together. I'll ask you, what about the chachila circumstance? Would Rav Weinberg allow men and women to sing together institutionally today? My impression on it, I'll give both sides. One side is that just based on what he writes, it shouldn't be permitted in a non-cure scenario. We should not institutionally allow men and women to do it.
Ish-Kodesh is not a cure scenario.
What is that?
Ish-Kodesh is not a cure scenario.
Well, you mean the shul?
The shul or
I don't know about. Oh, no, I'm not talking about him.
He's talking about not kirev or chaykin.
Right, he's talking about right.
Two types of kirev.
Okay. Okay.
Kirev or chaykin, people that are you really need to bring them back to keep Shabbos and to mamash it, and then you have to keep the kirev of the own people.
Right. Excellent. Group. So you need to maintain the people who are already
exactly.
brought up religious.
Exactly. There's two different halachas from both.
Wonderful. Okay, excellent distinction. Thank you. So I want to raise the question, which is, I don't know, you could say maybe a lot of modern Orthodox institutions are just constant bidyevit situations. One can make the radical notion of that. Or one could say that maybe even though he applied as far as in a bidyevit measure, his svaras are so compelling that why can't we use them lecharchila? That takes a little bit more of a stretch, and you definitely need poskim to rely on. I was very curious, and I'll just end off with this, because I was trying to see the relevance of it. NCSY, Bnei Akiva, Monorthodox youth groups, they have institutionalized men and women, boys and girls singing together. How could they do that? So it's probably based on a tradition. Almost every rabbi I've talked to in both of these organizations, if they know anything, they bring up the Sridi Yesh. It's the first source that comes up when you want to discuss this matter. I posted on a Facebook group trying to find out if NCSY or Bnei Akiva have it written down anywhere that we rely on the Sridi Yesh. Couldn't find it anywhere. But then my friend tagged someone who's involved in education at NCSY on that Facebook. On that Facebook post, it's not Rosalevsky. He's not on Facebook. He would definitely not be on that. And so he tagged him, and the person responded. He said, "NC Swy." He's high up in NC Swy. He said, "NC Swy doesn't have an institutionalized stance on it. We address the posting case by case." And I responded, and you know, kind of pushing, but trying to be respectful, saying, "With all due respect, I actually volunteered for NC Swy for a year and a half at the beginning of undergrad recently, and I understand that there's something called they call it ebbing, and it's an institutionalized part of NC Swy. So I wouldn't call it case by case. You must have consulted your postdoc." So thankfully, I actually learned through Rosalevsky Shear, who's a postdoc for NC Swy. I learned through Shear for my first 2 years in YU. So I saw him in the base medrash when I was researching this, and I went over to him and I asked him, "So how is this permissible? What do you do?" And I asked him, "Do you base it on Sri Yesh?" He's like, "Lamaisa, it's probably the Sri Yesh that we're relying on here." I didn't get such a strong answer. And my impression is that he probably goes with the approach that this is a Bidyevan measure, and that's why some of the what you call quote unquote firmer NC Swy programs are separate sects. Because many of the administration believes the Chachila in having separate sex institution. And that's why the more Kiruv ones like TJJ are integrated. But you go to something like NC Swy Kolel or I think Give, which is a girls program, they're separate for the firmer kids. Basically, this is a very relevant shua to be discussed today. Any person you talk to on this issue, if they know anything, Sri Yesh is like the first source that comes up. I'm glad that we got to learn it together, and there's so much more literature on the topic, but we can definitely take our first step in talking about this issue more intelligently. Thank you all for coming, and please come next week. Next week we'll be learning Rav Asher Weiss's tshuva on OCD and mental health in halacha. Thank you for coming. Thank you very much.